For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A busy old week in that world of non-league football too, and a memorable one for our two guest clubs this week. First up, we speak with Craig Parry, the manager of Worksop Town, who've already secured their playoff place this season and now focus their attention on the Northern Premier League Division 1 East title. He knows it won't be easy, but he's pleased that the club seem to be on the right footing, both on and off the field. I also have the privilege of speaking with, well, someone that's almost and must be a non-league legend. Nicky Ironton has won 3 conference titles as a player, 3 FA trophies as a player, and gained England semi-pro caps too. As a manager, he's done pretty well too, and seen pretty much all there is to see in non-league. But last Saturday was different. In a game that almost had everything, he saw his club come back from what looked like a 90th minute winner from their visitors to see his own Walthamstow side, 10 men at that, run out eventual 6-4 victors. Rounding up the week's non-league news, it's John Couch from the non-league paper with all the usual clubs in trouble, managers on the move, and National League title tussle news. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So, with promotion normally being just one automatic spot and another via the playoffs, even the most confident of managers will surely only set the playoffs as their target at the start of the season. So imagine achieving that marker even before the start of March. Our next guest has done that with his side sitting, 20 points clear at the top of the Northern Premier League East. I'd imagine he's pretty happy. So let's have a word with manager at Worksop Town, Mr. Craig Parry. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Craig.
Hi there. Welcome, yeah. Yep, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to get you on. And let's start with last Saturday. You played Shildon. They've not had a great season so far. They came to you, a 6-0 home win. I think that took you to 27 unbeaten in the league. You've won in the week as well, and it guaranteed that playoff spot. Saturday evening, were you able to let it sink in that you've achieved playoffs already?
Yeah, obviously, where the season's gone so far, we knew that this target would be achieved, you know, soon rather than later. But it's always nice to get that first target done and over the line. And obviously, we had a good result on the back of it. So, yeah, it's quite pleasing. And we were happy with how things have gone so far. And like you said, it's the first box tick for us as a club.
Yeah, first box ticks. And I was so keen to get you on because you came into the club, I think, April 2020. And it... Yeah, just a couple of months before that, in February 2020, we had Keith Illett, the club president, on the show. I think he'd been involved with the club for over 50 years. He was desperate to try and get some money in to help the club clear the debt for the new chairman, Pete Whitehead, to come back in. In 3 years, I'm now talking to you. You're the first club, I believe, in sort of the main part of the pyramid to achieve a playoff spot. How's that all come about in 3 years? You've been there nearly 3 years. Is it just yourself?
No, not at all. I'm just a small piece in a large cog, really. No, I think a lot of it has to go down to, you know, the chairman that's come in and done an amazing job in putting a great structure, platform and stadium together and allowing everyone around us to try and make things happen. It's a collective team. You know, there's a lot of good people at the club and also the staff. You know, I have really great staff that work the players hard and deliver what needs to be. And I think basically this year is that all the recipe has gone has been brought together and obviously it's brought us success so far.
Yeah, and I understand from my contacts nearer your area of the country than mine that you are the gurus on set pieces in the division at the moment.
Yeah, we tried to sell some set players, defensive and attacking wise. I think a lot of teams will say that we're quite big as a team. We are quite big, so we try to take advantage of that. But the lads are well drilled on what we want from set players, and you know, at the minute in time, it's paying off. So we're happy with that, and may it continue.
And does that though, when you're so good at set pieces, though, does that then put extra pressure when you are in and around the box, and you suddenly? I know you've got some great travelling support as well. Does it put extra pressure on your players to perform in those set pieces when you're so good?
No, I think the pressure comes from my demand it from the players. I said that from day one, that I want set players to be a massive priority this year. And I demand that we execute every single game. So I think that pressure is not from anyone from the outside. I think it's coming from me in the changing room. And so far, fair play to the players and the squad that delivered on that demand.
Yeah, you've only played 28 games so far this season as well. I mean, I think that's the remarkable thing. You've still got, a good part of the season still to come. Obviously, you want to go up as the champions. You want to secure that promotion. How though do you keep the players going now? Do you set them other targets to make sure that you achieve your target?
No, I think the players are clear from minute one what our target's been, and that's try to get promotion this season. And we put a lot of pressure on the players week in, week out. We have high standards and demand high standards. We, ensure that they follow that week in, week out. And if they don't follow that, then obviously we're on them very quickly, and they're brought back in line to ensure that the standards that the club set and ourselves as managers, as management team, is that it's followed. And we're constantly demanding more from the players, so I think from that perspective, we're constantly pushing and trying to achieve, ultimately what our goal is.
Yeah, and I seem to recall, and I might have got this wrong, and I'm sure one of our listeners will tell me if I have, but isn't Worksop something like the fourth oldest football club in the world?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that one.
But
you've probably caught me short on that one, but I'm. I know it's got great history, and obviously I know there's been a remarkable history done this year. We're a museum in the city, so in the town. So it is filled with great history, and I'm sure we want to carry on and make his own history now.
Yeah, and that was part of my. Part of my point, I knew there's this museum coming up. We're only 3 years since we spoke to Keith, and there was the potential risk of the demise of the club. You've now got things moving, and as a manager, can you see that these players can take you up into the next level and compete in the next level up at step three?
Yeah, 100%. The players that we had a strategy this year, and the players that we wanted to work with, and the crew. We heavily focused on the recruitment that we wanted to work with these players long term, not short term. So try not, create a short term fix, try and create a long term fix. And we've done that, and the players are already committed, to next year. And we believe that that if we are successful, we can maintain that these players can keep carrying on the run with us and help us along this journey, because we believe a lot of the players can play at a high level.
And I said your strength is set pieces, and I guess that must also be defensively as well, because you've only conceded 16 goals in the league. I remember someone telling me many, many years ago that successful teams are the ones that don't concede, and that does seem to be true as well. Is that because do you play in an attacking format? Is that the best way to defend?
Yeah, we believe so. We try to be on the front foot all the time and attack teams. The defence, obviously, has took a lot of credit in the goalkeeper, but we pride ourselves on defending as a team together, and going pressing high and going winning the ball back high up the pitch. So it's worked for us this year and may continue.
Yeah, another tough game again this Saturday, away at Grimsby Borough. Again, sort of hopeful for the making the playoffs. You do a fair amount of travelling, don't you, your division? Does that help in helping build the team spirit throughout the squad?
Yeah, obviously the journey's there and back. We with the players on the bus, we do things professionally, so it does build the team spirit and obviously help them the winner. But the travelling is just part and parcel of football in any level, really. So we embrace it and we prepare right, and obviously try and make sure that the journey's home of happy ones.
colleague on this show, Dave Anson, was a goalkeeper and has gone on to, you know, obviously win the FA Vase as a manager of success at AFC Wimbledon as well. You're a goalkeeper as well. Do you think being a goalkeeper helps you in terms of management? Because you've maybe watched the pattern of play more during your playing career as well.
I don't think so. From my perspective, is that kind of learning on the job, really, making mistakes and trying to learn from them. But I also think learning from managers that I've tried to take things from my early days all the way up to end of my playing days, tried to look at what I thought I'd do different or what I could do better, and try to build all that into my own ways and my own strategies and try and take that forward.
And that is, you know, every day is a learning day. In your management career, you started out at Pontefract Collieries and obviously had success with them on promotion side. When you came into Worksop, you had that COVID season as well, didn't you, where the club there was a potential to do so well and that cut short. I've looked at other clubs and for some it hindered them, but for maybe a club like yourself, maybe you were able to keep the squad together and keep that thing going. Maybe the COVID season ending earlier actually benefited you going into this season now.
I think the COVID season, if all honesty, made the clubs completely start from the beginning. We just didn't have the COVID situation. We were on that, then we were placed in the Southern Division, and then that division then turns to North. So we've actually tried to recruit, you know, three or four times. I think what's helped us this year is that we've actually had a settled direction. There's been no disturbances. We've done our business really early and had a complete structure from top to the bottom of what we want to try and achieve. And I think because we've done that early and being able to plan and do things correctly, that's helped us along this journey.
Yeah. Well, it does seem, Craig, that the successful managers are the ones that always never seem to get flustered. And it seems to me that your feet are firmly on the ground, ready for Saturday, ready to hopefully take this title. I wish you well for the rest of the season. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
No problem. Pleasure. Thanks for having me. Speak to you soon.
Now, it was only a fortnight ago we spoke with the Wingate and Finchley boss, Ahmet Rifat, on his side battling back from 3-0 down to win 4-3, and we thought that might be the greatest comeback of all time. Well, I'd probably let somebody with more experience than me decide that. What about a guy who is a player, played for the England semi-pro side, won the conference title, I think, 3 times, FA Trophy twice, who was a manager, has had FA Cup and FA Vase runs, as well as league promotions. And then on Saturday, he saw his 10-men side come back from 4-3 down on 90 minutes to win in injury time. I speak, of course, and welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Nicky Ironton, manager at Walthamstow FC. Welcome, Nicky.
Hi, yeah. Nice to be on your show.
Well, it's good to get you on. I say you came back in injury time because you were 4-3 down. You won it 6-4. Was that the greatest comeback of all time?
Well, to be honest, I've never, ever been involved in a football match like it in my life. It was surreal, to be honest. It was a little bit like time had just stopped still. It was one of them games when we were 1-0 up, 2-1 down, 3-2 up, 4-3 down on 90 minutes. And then you think, right, that's it, the writing's on the wall. And we just got 3 goals in the 91st, 92nd and 96th minute. It was just incredible, incredible game, you know. But as I said, all the plaudits go to the players. They kept going non-stop for the whole 96 minutes. And yeah, we had 10 men as well for the last sort of 18, 20 minutes of the game. So I don't think that'll ever repeat to the game.
You were down to 10 men because your son George, who's in the side, had an injury to his ankle, I believe. First off, I mean, how is his ankle? Is he?
He's not. He's in a bad way. He's had a bad season all round, really. Yeah. since he went to Royston, he got injured, and consequently he's had injuries ever since. He's tried to come back two or three times. His ankle's gone, but I would imagine this time it's gone completely, so he probably won't play again this season. But it's just one of them things, and unfortunately I put the subs on, all three of them, and he got the tackle about 18, 20 minutes before the end. And at the time, we were quite in control of the game. We were 3-2 up and, you know, looking to score again. But these things happen. And I don't know if it's all meant for a reason. I don't know. But, to my opinion, there must be a God up there somewhere, because that result was just outstanding.
And you're down to 10 men. Where get level, I think, on 87 minutes, so 3-3 then. Then they take the lead on the 90th minute. Are you in the referee's ear saying, yeah, how long are you adding on, ref, and all that sort of thing?
Do you know what? It's just one of them games. If you're a neutral, it's an enthralling game. Fair play to wear as well. It was a sort of a boxing match from, jabbing and punching all the way through the whole 90 minutes. And, you just didn't know what was going to happen next. And, they got the equaliser wear on the 86th minute, and then the guy... an absolutely outstanding fourth goal for them on the 90th minute. And just from the kickoff, I just said, go four up front. And then we scored straight from the kickoff, come back again. They had a couple of attempts on our goal, and then we broke away again, scored again. And then right at the end, Kai Davis ran the whole length of the pitch and got the sixth goal. It's just Roy the Rover stuff.
Now, I mentioned that Wingate and Finchley game against Bowers and Pitsy from a couple of weeks back in the opener. I suppose the only other twist that they had was that their goalkeeper came up and scored the equaliser. Did you allow your keeper up in those final minutes as well?
You know what? Nothing even come through on my... It was one of them games where you're stunned and you sort of froze in the moment. And there was no time for anything. Everything just happened in... So 86 minutes and 96 minutes, sort of five goals were scored, and it was just, I don't know, it's just something, a bit like an epiphany in life. It just happened, and afterwards you think, did that happen? And that's exactly how it went. And all the players, all the crowd, all our supporters, everyone just went crazy. And even after, it was one of them games, and I've been involved in football all my life. I got home and I was absolutely shattered. It was like I'd been like 12 rounds with Mike Tyson. My back ached. I couldn't move. And I imagine Paul at Ware felt the same as well. And, I felt a bit sorry for him as well, because it was just like he'd knocked someone out in the 12th round of a boxing match, and then got up and he got knocked out himself. It's just a strange, strange game.
Yeah, and after that win on Saturday, they then go away on Wednesday evening, and at fellow playoff chasers Kidlington, you leapfrog them in the Southern Division central table and go up to fourth.
Yeah, we're in a good vein of form at the moment. I think we've won 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 11. Few on numbers. Unfortunately, we've had a couple of injuries. Had a few players sent off the dubious decisions in the last few games. But at the moment, everyone's buoyant. And we went there, and to be honest, we won 1-0. We should have won up 2 or 3-0, in my opinion. We played really, really well last night. Pretty solid. Didn't look like we were going to concede a goal like we had the last three games. And big Carl Mintzer got up and got the winner from a corner. We still missed numerous chances, but football's a funny game. We're not getting carried away. We're in a good position. We just got to keep going now. Worry about Hadley on Saturday, and then worry about Ware the following week. Which should be a funny game to have again.
That'll be an interesting game. That one for sure. But weeks like these, they can catapult and change a whole season, can't they? You've got some old heads in your side that know what winning promotion is like. Is that going to be essential going into games like those you've just mentioned coming ahead?
Yeah, I had a chat with the chairman of the committee this morning, and they were saying various things. I just said we're in a good place at the moment, but I just think the personnel we've got in the side are experienced. They know how to win. And the good thing, I don't think anyone's getting carried away. We've gone on a good run, and we needed to go on a good run to get us into the playoffs, because when I took over, we had a terrible start. So I'm quite confident, but not overconfident, because, as I said earlier, anyone can beat anyone in this league. But, I'm hopeful that, we keep the form going. We've got some hard games coming up. Had to be a hard game Saturday. We're just trying to focus, do the right things, and trying to recover you know, have ice baths and stretching, etc., and get prepared for Saturday.
And is the title really beyond you now, though? With Berkhamsted, what, 18 points clear, and they've got that unbeaten home record, I think, now at 20 matches. Is it playoffs now that you're looking to achieve?
Oh, the title went about 2 months ago. I said it right from the beginning. Chris Devane's got a good side there. They'll win it, but with 5 or 6 games to go, I actually don't even think anyone will get to their points tally now, 71. I think if you get to 62 points, you've got a chance of getting in the playoffs. But no, that's gone, done and dusted. Obviously, we want to try and get in the playoffs and obviously, you know, try and get as high as we can in the playoffs, because if you get second or third, you get a home game. Fourth or fifth would be a away game. But saying that, last year, we got in the playoffs, obviously got chucked out because our ground went up to the regulations at Welling. The teams that come fifth, I think 4 of them teams that come fifth in various leagues got promoted. So even though it is an indicator, I wouldn't take that for granted. But no, it's gone. The title's gone. Fair play to him. Very good organised team. You know, he knows what he's doing. He's got some very good players there, and they totally deserve it. Good luck to him.
Yeah, what have you got? 11 games left, I think, left in the league. It's a case of keeping that momentum going, isn't it? And making sure that when you do, wherever you end up in the playoffs, that you're the ones that no one wants to be playing.
I think that could be the case now, but the problem is, as I said to a lot of the players, we could win the next 9 games and then lose the first playoff game, so everything's a waste of time. So you've just got to make sure you're focused on what you're doing, be level-headed. The boys have been absolutely superb. They've trained week in, week out. I've always got 20-22 at the training sessions. The fitness level has improved unbelievable. They're now buying into how I want them to play. Tactically, we're a lot more clued up and astute to what I want. And also, I've got some young players in the team, and they've had a different coaching program after the last 3 or 4 months. And now they know, you know, there's no certain circumstances, know exactly what I want them to do. So, it's coming to fruition a little bit. But as I just said, not getting carried away. There's still 7 or 8 good teams in that playoff area. And anyone's capable of beating anyone on the day. So we just take 1 game at a time.
Yeah, plenty of experience there. Sort of knowing that there's so many things that can still trap you up. I mentioned your own highly successful playing career as a non-league player. Was management always on the cards for you? You seem to be enjoying it.
I do really enjoy it. I played quite late in my career, so I was fortunate. I was player coach at Reading McCluskey, a couple of teams, and then I got into management. I just think you can either manage or you can't. I think you've got to have a little bit of luck on the way, and I've had a bit of luck, and last Saturday might have been another example of it. But the one thing that I've always instilled in my players is never give up. Keep going to the final whistle. If you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. But just give it everything. And the boys have taken that on board. And, obviously my playing career, I was successful. But I was always surrounded by good players and players that wanted to win. And that was instilled into me from a long, long time ago. From players like Tony Jennings and, them sort of players that were proper leaders of men, and they made you perform week in, week out, and that's what you want. And I'm lucky at the moment. I've got some experienced players. Dan Green, that I've got from Royston, has been unbelievable for me. He hasn't missed a game since he's come over. He's technically good. He gets players going, and everyone wants to play for everyone. And the camaraderie we've got is second to none. So hopefully, that gets over the line.
Yeah, you mentioned luck there earlier on, and someone told me very early on, particularly in football, that you make your own luck. And you also touched upon when you were a manager at Welling Garden City, you'd had those COVID hit seasons where you were doing so well. You got to the Southern League Central playoffs last term, but couldn't play due to ground grading. You resigned, and for a time, I know other people that I spoke to, we were worried we'd lost you from non-league. What made you come back and join Walthamstow in September?
I've had 2 respites in my playing in my managerial career. Both when my sons were growing up, we thought it's fair that I could give them, the right time and opportunity to go and play football in their own careers. And I don't think I could have given everything at a football club and with my son. So I took the decision to, I had 2 respites, one for 4 years and one for 3 years. And then when the Wellington City sort of debacle came across, I decided, you know, on principle that I was going to leave. I had quite a few offers, I've got to be honest, but nothing really fitted to what I wanted to do. Plus, the offers I get were a little bit far away to travel, and I didn't really want to travel too far. And then I got a phone call out of the blue from Lee at Walthamstow and said he wanted me to take over. I had a little chat with my wife about it, and then I'm still hungry for it, and that's the main thing, you know. And if I can't give 100%, I wouldn't do it. So I think the little breaks I've had have given me the energy to keep going. So hopefully, you know, I'll keep going to the end of this season at least anyway.
Yeah. And it's not just Walthamstow, is it, that keeps you busy? Your sons as well. But Middlesex Wanderers still close to your heart too.
Yeah, I still manage the Middlesex Wanderers and the Middlesex Wanderers Vets. And that's great. I mean, you know, not boasting, we haven't been beaten for 10 years now. But saying that, I've got a ridiculous veteran side now. They're all ex-pros, ex-conference players. And it's really, really enjoyable. The camaraderie we got is, again, second to none. Easiest team in the world to manage. You just give them their numbers, they go out and just play. So that isn't a problem. And then, you know, we try and have a tour every year, but unfortunately because of the COVID, it set us back 3 years, so we haven't been abroad for the main team. But hopefully we've got one coming up in the next year, so if that comes to fruition, that'd be good. We can go around selecting players and go off and represent Great Britain again, which is really what it's all about.
I think we could probably spend hours talking about non-league football and the wonders that brings people together. I mean, it's an exciting time to be talking to you, Nicky. So I'm pleased to get you on the non-league football show. Wish you well at the weekend. Wish you well for the rest of the season. And wish everybody at Walthamstow well too. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for your time. Really enjoyed your interview. Thank you.
Time then to head on over to non-league paper towers, and he's the non-league papers executive editor, Mr. John Couch. Or welcome, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, it's another busy Thursday. It does seem so much going on this week. We saw the new entity Yeovil Town FC take over the core football business down there, with the majority of voices. What I've seen anyway, seen it as a start of a new chapter for the Somerset Club. We also saw Southend United announce that they'd settled their HMRC winding up petition and that they were hoping for an injection of working capital in the coming months. Do you think football's getting back on the right foot, John?
Yeah, two pieces of good news this week, weren't they? There were two clubs that non-league's been worried about in the last few weeks. It was all going to come to a head. Obviously, we knew about Southend, and it was their state of destiny, wasn't it, this week? And with the High Court, but you know, heard the day before that all the bills have been paid, and it was then confirmed that that the players are actually being paid for January, and I think there's a few staff remaining, but things certainly seem to be on the right track there, which is great, you know, because Southend are a big famous. Big famous club and huge fan base. Great for non-league at the moment. I mean, they're going great guns in the National League, and those fans who have been suffering quite a bit of late. A loss, something for them to cheer about. Apart from the football, as I said, the football certainly kept them entertained. They've been on a great run. They're sitting pretty in the playoffs, and you know, hopefully they can stay there, but. Now with that behind them, the future looks bright both on and off the field. And good luck to them. And the same with Yeovil as well. Yeovil, obviously, that's been an ongoing issue there, and they've seem to have struck a deal where a new takeover appears to have been finalised. I said the word appears. The statement they gave was pretty vague. As to and it left them more questions than answers, and I think we'll find out more about that in the coming days. But certainly, there's a dawn of a new horizon down there.
Yeah, and you know, with all these things as well, there's so much other red tape and other things that need to be rubber stamped that we don't get to see that take time and whatever people think of the. Fitness test for directors and all that sort of thing. The administration that goes beyond with all of these things isn't a quick process, and that doesn't help things. And I mean, you mentioned you made reference to it in regards to Southend that obviously the petition where they've paid up this HMRC petition didn't include any other unpaid amount. So you mentioned that the players have got paid up. There are still some staff, I understand, that are outstanding, some other suppliers to the club. I mean, including, I think, the Shrimpers Trust that lent them some money before. And there's still no official accounts being filed at Company's House for a number of years. It's an interesting scenario. They do seem to have made, sort of put an end to that petition that's coming. I just hope that there aren't more, because as to whether they've been paying HMRC in the interim as well, from where that goes. And it is one of those stories that might just keep going and going. We hope not, because as you say, they're doing so well on the field, and another Friday night football ahead this week.
That's right. I mean, as you said earlier, there is red tape on these things. It's not as easy as, oh, here we go. Like sort of buying something from a shop, you know, it's a big issue. You talk about £1.4 million here, so you know it's obviously something that isn't going to be done overnight. I think the fans are a little bit relieved. Tensions have been so high over there. I think they are still asking questions as to certain parts of the deal that haven't really as yet been confirmed, but certainly it was a good week for them.
The other hat on it, sometimes when you are running the club, because there's all these admin tasks and certain steps, procedures and things that you need to go through, particularly when you're dealing with HMRC, sometimes you can't give the full information, even if you wanted to.
No, that's right. I mean, there's clauses in these kind of deals where the trust, for example, I mean, they've obviously lent them some money, so there's going to be stipulations and things that the fans don't know, or definitely don't even want to know, to be fair. All they want is a working football club, and they want to be happy in who's running that football club, and obviously they're not. There's still a big section of them who are not happy with Ron Martin, even though this deal has been brokered, and I think that will roll on. There's still a lot of Martin out protesters there, even though £1.4 million has been paid off, and that will roll on as well. But I just hope for the now, you know, they can rest a little bit easier, and you know, they can look forward to their football on the field as well. As much as they possibly can, because as we said earlier, the team are going great guns, and you know, hopefully that's given them a platform for a bright future, both on and off the field.
Yeah, and interestingly, I don't know whether you've read the 99-page document, the Sustainable Future Reforming Football Club Football Governance, that white paper from the Department of Culture, of Media and Sport from last week. I'm quite sad, I have to admit. I've read it a few more times and sort of flicked through it. It's sort of something that interests me, something that, you know, lots of stuff that we've spoken about and wanted for years and that sort of thing. But my understanding is that it does seem that Southend have settled this sum this week by effectively debt loading, which is borrowing more money to pay old debt. So, you know, old-fashioned terminology, rob Peter to pay Paul, in a way, as the saying goes. You know, they're aiming to get that money in the long run anyway and get that back. But under the new licensing system and regulator proposals in that government white paper, that probably wouldn't be allowed in the future.
That's right, yeah. It was quite interesting, the fact that that the white paper come out during the same week that Southend and Yeovil announced their big changes. I must confess, I haven't read the 99-page document.
I've read it for you. Yeah, don't worry.
That's right. I mean, it does appear that way. Yes, it does appear that they've got Peter to pay Paul, and you know, in years to come, I don't think it's going to be allowed. But I think we're just relieved that that Southend United still have a football club, and certainly the white paper has been well received by most of the people I've spoken to actually non-league, if not all, and I think certainly it gives us a platform really for a good future, so that we don't get the likes of Bury, Macclesfield, maybe even Southend, sort of happening again, and hopefully these football clubs can be protected properly.
Yeah, I think I spoke with Kevin Rye last week. The important thing I think that should come from it is we'll have some lines in the sand, we'll have some guidance, we'll have some rails upon which to sort of base how football clubs run. I think and it's great. It's a bit like the internet, isn't it? They say the internet should be left to run itself and it'll self-regulate. It never quite works like that, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, that's right. And there's a lot of talk on social media. I try not to pay too much attention to it, but unfortunately, a lot of people do. And it's caused a bit of a problem for Southend over the last few weeks, and it's resulted in protests and what have you. And I saw video of poor old Stan Collymore getting accosted as he walked into Route Tour the other day, which you never really want to see. But thankfully, hopefully now, as I say, they can rest that little bit easier. But as you quite rightly say, there's still more questions to be answered, and I don't think it's the end of the matter just yet.
Yeah, and I'll go back to the point that we've made countless times on this show, and you've made in the paper as well, that people aren't involved in non-league football really to make it to be difficult. You know, most of the people that are league administrators are there because they've been involved with clubs or counties and worked their way out. They've put the hours in, they've put the years in, they've got the experience. They're not there trying to make life more difficult for other people. Even the people that own the football clubs, they might have quirky ways, they might have different ways about them, but they're not. I can't genuinely foresee that there's that many people involved in non-league football that are just trying to do it to wind up the fans.
No, that's right. I mean, these guys, especially if you look at the National League Board, they're all guys who have been involved in non-league football for a long time and have affiliations with certain clubs. I mean, you have to look at Brian Lee, who we spoke about two weeks ago. With his passing, he was a great example of someone who fell in love with non-league through administration, through a club, and has sort of worked his way up and been on various committees and panels and what have you, and built up big relationships. And non-league, I mean, Brian Lee was an exception, but non-league is full of Brian Lees and people who do understand the rigours of owning a non-league club. And yes, there are some characters out there who think think they can run a club maybe slightly differently or have different ideas as to how to run a football club. But you don't run a non-league football club and expect to make money. So there are ways of doing it. But I think in general, I think you can say that the governance at non-league level is as strong as it could be, because it's full of good people who love the game.
Yeah, and it was interesting, like, looking at that white paper. There's lots of suggestions in there which I seem to think that non-league are doing already. So again, non-league leading the way. On a similar note, I don't know if you saw, but I took interest in the parting message of outgoing chairman Alex Petherham at Gloucester City this week. Again, maybe one of these Marmite characters, particularly if you're a Gloucester City fan. But listeners will remember Alex from his candid interviews on this show, especially during COVID. And I think his statement on the Gloucester website was no less open and no less honest. Crowds are down, bills are up, various economic pressures. He said he had to put a further £30,000 into the club to help pay February's wage bill, but with his own business facing similar issues, he just can't take that anymore. He just can't put any more in. What's been sad to see is that there's been attacks on him. I love my football, I love my club, but I think even if you buy a football club, you don't have to also commit to put your whole of your life savings into it and your family estate. You know, in days gone by, the blood, sweat and tears was probably enough for your input into the club. And I don't think the economic situation in Gloucester is going to be any different from hundreds, maybe thousands of other clubs up and down the land. And if we get directors and potential directors see this sort of unfair criticism, and in many cases, it's just disgusting abuse. He's a family man that's put some many hours into the football club over the years and lots of money, getting abused because he's having a withdrawal because he can't help continue. He just can't continue funding them anymore. If these sort of people are getting this abuse and other people see that, these people aren't going to linger around non-league anymore. They're not going to invest in your club. They're not going to support your club, even as a sponsor. And then where's non-league going to end up? It's easy to be that keyboard warrior, a voice in the stand at the back, you know, making joining of all these chants. But it's actually much harder to be the one to step forward, take on much of the pain of running a football club, which many of us don't actually see, keep it solvent, and also try to be successful. Rant over.
Yes, very much. Yeah, very much so. I couldn't put it any better myself. I thought Alex Pepple's statement this week was pretty heartwarming. To be honest, he's come out. He's just been as honest as he possibly can. This is a guy who took over a club with all the best intentions. Probably didn't think it would cost him as much time, effort, and money as it has done. It's crowding a lot of money, and you know, people think, you know, sixth tier of English football won't cost you that kind of money, but things have changed now. I mean, non-league football, as you rightly said, used to be all about blood, sweat and tears and playing the team down the road and, you know, all have a beer afterwards. But it's not quite like that anymore, is it? It's, you know, we're talking about, you know, even at step two level, you're talking about a huge amount of money to keep a football club going. And Gloucester City have been through the mire, haven't they, over the last few years with floods at their previous ground and then coming back into the city and establishing themselves at step two. That they've had some highs and they've had some lows over the last sort of two or three seasons. But I got a good manager in there, and Steve King, who knows how to run a football club, and himself. But I had nothing but sympathy for Alex Pepple, and I'm sure he's not the only one who's in that boat. I know my local club, Farnborough, that they've had similar issues over the last few years. You know, people have been sort of pulling their hair out, really. You know, trying to make ends meet, but as you say, you know, the people on the so-called keyboard warriors don't see that day-to-day running of a football club, and I just have total sympathy for people in that position, and I just hope that non-league can survive, and you know, that people like Alex Pepple stick with it, and get the backing that they so need.
Yeah, and yeah, it's important for the whole of non-league that, you know, that we're able to attract people that are good businessmen or have got successful businesses elsewhere, because it, you know, even further down the line, there's bigger pressures that I know that are going to come to bear on non-league clubs in terms of regulation, in terms of requirements. And then all these things are all coming in for the right reason, to try and, you know, help protect us at health and safety and that sort of thing. But there's a great deal of cost that comes with that, and that could be difficult for every non-league club up and down the land. Anyway, from who'd be a chairman to who'd be a manager? Darryl McMahon. He was the big departure this week. I say he'd had relative success in just over 3 years. At what, 12th, 8th, I think it was 10th, and 5 points off the playoffs when he got sacked. But not good enough for those owners in at Dagenham and Redbridge.
I have to say I was amazed by this. I really did. It very little surprises me in non-league football much anymore, but this one did. Darryl McMahon, I think, has done an excellent job at Dagenham and Redbridge. He's kept them in and around the playoff positions for a long time. He's kept up the support of that famous club brought in some excellent players, and they played good football, entertaining football. It was always goals where tagging them Redbridge around, and I don't quite see why he didn't fit. To be quite honest, I don't know whether there was something behind the scenes maybe that triggered it, but I mean, Dagenham won the last game under him, didn't they? They beat Chesterfield, I think, in there about 2 days before, and they were travelling up to preparing to travel up to Notts County, and eventually beat Notts County on Saturday, we were thinking of poor Darryl sitting at home and watching that result come through on his telly, and he would have had his head in his hands. But no, that one foxed me, I must admit. I don't think Darryl will be out of the game long. He's a good young manager. He's been touted by a lot of Football League clubs. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he ended up in the Football League at some point. So yeah, hopefully Dale will be back, and Dagenham, I'm sure, will have a plan in place.
Yeah, and another departure this week as well. After offering some stability to Dulwich Hamlet when he first came in, Paul Barnes has struggled this year. They had a number of games and just haven't. I think the last one the middle of January, and he's lost his job as first team manager there. A big club, but an example of how tough those step two divisions are, as you mentioned in relation to Gloucester.
That's right. I mean, it step two of both leagues, both north and south. It's pretty cutthroat. I saw Dulwich in a difficult sort of position, in the fact that they're a very, very well supported football club who demand at least step two football, if not higher. And standards and expectations are very high. And I must admit, I was a little bit surprised by the appointment of Paul. It was a big step for him. I know he was very highly thought of at the football club when he first joined. His CV wouldn't really suggest that he was perfectly primed for that job. I must admit, but he made a decent start, and he was obviously, as I say, he's obviously very popular up there. But it's got to the stage of the season now where if you're flirting with the bottom, and there's no poor team in that league. There's no whipping boy, and but Dulwich obviously felt it. It was time to make a change. But Paul's another one. You know, he's been in and around the league for a long time. He's a very well respected coach. And I'm sure he'll be back somewhere along the ladder pretty soon.
Yeah. And elsewhere, Brighton Sea Regent, they parted with Brett Maynard. Anthony Jupp stepped down at Epsom and York due to work commitments. And Tom Spears left Slimbridge Town. But we also saw some old faces reappearing this week in the dugouts. A dugout near you, but potentially Ian Selly comes in at Isthmian South Central Westfield. Paul Carden replaces Richie Sutton and Gary Taylor Fletcher at Nantwich. And Neil Baker and John Underwood return to buddy up once again, this time in charge at Beaconsfield Town in the Southern Premier South.
Yeah, great to see Bakes and Unders back. It's been a while. Obviously 10 years at Slough, over 600 games. It was inevitable that they're going to come back at some point. There's been a lot of talk as to where they would resurface. Beaconsfield's perfect for them. It's nice and local to them. A very, very ambitious club. They've got the foundations of a good football setup there. And I think they'll go there and they'll do extremely well. I think they've talked about the fact that this season's probably a bit too late for a playoff push, so they've now got a good couple of months to set themselves up and really have like a mini pre-season now, and they can probably sort things out and ready to go next year, because the division they're in, the Southern Premier South, as you know very well, Tim, is a tough league, and there's some very good sides in there, so. They're going to need to hit the ground running, but I think they've got a I think they've got a perfect platform really there to build themselves on. They've been promoted from step three before, and they'll be looking to do that again. And wish them both all the very best.
Yeah, I probably echo that. I probably think I probably gave away far too much about the Southern League divisions. Premier South when I had a conversation with the two of them the other day before they'd been appointed to Beaconsfield. But yeah, maybe that helped to sway them into getting back into the dugout. It's you mentioned earlier about that Dagenham win up at Notts County. It means it's all changing again at the top in the National League. Wrexham now at top there, one game in hand now, but they've one point clear from Notts County. Both have tough away games this weekend, so who knows what the next twist is going to be. And it's so tight now, and just that one game difference as well. I'm not even sure that forthcoming head-to-head on Easter Monday is even going to decide it, because I think they've still got four games to follow after that. It's going to go all the way to the wire.
Yeah, it does appear that way, doesn't it? And what a difference a week makes. I mean, who would have expected Notts County to have been beaten at home to Dagenham, and then Wrexham scraped to win, well, 2-0, which is relatively comfortable, but for everybody else, but for Wrexham, they may be looking at, very rarely they didn't get four or five, but the two of them are still going head to head, and Wrexham now have the edge on Notts County. I just feel that they look pretty imperious at the moment, Wrexham. I just feel that they're hitting like a next gear, and I think it's them in the ascendancy now, and it's Notts County chasing them. But as you say, it's going to go right away to the wire. That Easter Monday game looks delicious, doesn't it? And I think if Wrexham can find themselves ahead 2 or 3 points sort of by that time, then it's probably theirs to lose. But as you say, two very difficult away games this week. Wrexham are going to go to Maidenhead. Maidenhead's an awful place to go if you really need a win. It's a very, very tricky place to go and play. Alan Devish's teams are always very, very difficult to play against. They're going to make it very, very difficult for them. So every week it seems that that there seems to be a twist in the tail, and it's certainly a title chase to whet the appetites of non-league fans everywhere.
Yeah, talking of the twist in the tail, off the field, Gateshead in the National League and Welling in the National South have had a point each deducted after fielding ineligible players. That might have an impact on the relegation battle, particularly for Gateshead. It's just so tight down there, isn't it? I think that takes Gateshead to 32 points. You've got Dorking Wanderers just above them now on 33 points. I've said it time and time again, the secretary's job in a football club is the worst job, the hardest job, the most thankless task ever. And I do feel sorry for them when sometimes, quite often, it's the computers from the FA don't update the database quick enough, and that's where you fall foul of these rules.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking about... One person really against an entity, and you have to feel sorry for Gateshead and Welling this week. Gateshead in particular, I mean, that 1 point, don't really want to be losing 1 point in a relegation battle such as that. It's put them back into the relegation zone, and all of a sudden it makes all the difference. But we said it before. You have to have so much sympathy with the people behind the scenes, those administrators who do everything in their power to keep the club going, keep the club running, and things that people don't see. 99% of their work is not seen by the fans. The running of a football club is done totally in house. You know, fans just turn up on a Saturday afternoon, expect everything to be in place, and expect to. Expect a clear up operation and get ready again for next week. It's not like that. It's 24/7 in many respects. And these people, the administration, they deserve utmost respect. Sometimes, as you say, you know, there were many things that can go against them. And you know, I mean, Welling's case this week, the international clearance. You know, I mean, what a tough rule that is to decipher. It's, you know, you have to have a lot of sympathy for both clubs, and you know, I'm sure the National League don't like imposing sanctions like that, but you know, on this occasion, it's Gateshead and Welling who have to suffer. I just hope, for the sake of non-league football, for football in general, I just hope that point doesn't send Gateshead down, because you know, that would be very, very cruel. Fingers crossed it doesn't come to that.
Indeed. You mentioned about the hard work, 24/7, 7 days a week of those individuals helping run football clubs. What about the individuals running the non-league paper? You know, this is the glory bit for you, John, isn't it? No one sees all the hours and the hard work that has to go in during the week, and then particularly on a Saturday to get the paper out. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, busy week as you say. We've been speaking to various people. We've been looking forward to the Trophy in Advance, which the quarterfinals are taking place next week. We've spoken to Aldershot, who are looking to get to Wembley for the first time. We've also got a nice piece on Ascot United. We've got a nice piece on Atherstone in the Vars. Talking a lot about Southend and Yeovil and their situations. We've got a nice piece on England C. England C will be naming their squad in the next few hours. So we've been speaking to Paul Fairclough as they look to play Wales. As I said, the last time they did that back in November, they got a bit of a humbling, didn't they? They lost 4-0. So he's looking to get some revenge. And there's a nice piece on Paul. He's picked his squad somewhat differently this time, which is quite interesting. So just to appease managers who may be thinking, oh no, you know, it's Christmas end of the season, I'm not going to lose X amount of players. But no, Paul Fairclough knows exactly where you're coming from, and he's made life very easy for those managers. So that's a nice interesting piece as well.
Well, good, all good stuff. I look forward to reading that piece in particular and finding out a bit more about the England C and the fact that it's still going as well. That excites me. We've had these various conversations. But John Couch, thanks once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading the paper on Sunday, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers, Dan.
And that's it then for this week. Don't forget, we do have Non-League Day coming up, Saturday the 25th of March. Make sure you got that one in your diary. Make sure your club's got something organised to try and make the rest of the world understand why we love non-league football so much. So thank you as ever to all of my guests. Thank you to everybody for listening. Remember, you can of course follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. I'm there myself at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L, and you can always find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA, JABBA.